Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And welcome to the Chronicles of Nannia, a nanny resource podcast made for nannies by me, a nanny. This is your host, Martha Tyler. And this week, we are going to be talking about adventurous eating. And to do that, I have brought on, actually back on, Angelina Pizzi. Hello, Angelina.
Well, hello, Miss Martha. Hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on again. Angelina was on an episode how many years ago now?
I think it was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I think that's about right.
So go look up her other episode. Actually, I'll just link it down in the show notes so you can listen to her other episode too. But today we're going to be talking about adventurous eating and all the things that go under that umbrella, which is a lot. And I'm so excited. Before we get started talking about that, I would love to hear your journey with both childcare and feeding our littlest members.
Wonderful. Well, I kind of fell into nannying over a decade ago. I, like many, many women, just assumed at one point in my life I would eventually be a mother. In fact, it was the job that I always knew that I would be best at. So when I was young, people would ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I would always respond with something like scientist or teacher. But I knew, I just understood that somewhere out in the arc of my future, there was a family of my very own just waiting to be mine. Mm. And I actually went to school to be a scientist. I went to school to be an engineer. And since that's just kind of problem solving with numbers, I ended up working in high stakes finance for about 12 years before it finally happened. I found out that I cannot have children of my own. So, you know, that was it was a very devastating thing to find out. And I really knew that I wanted to affect children's lives in some way still, you know, knowing that I couldn't be a mother. So I actually left my job and went back to school to be a teacher, and back to college for another few years to learn how to be an educator and learn about how children learn. And I worked in the Chicago public school systems for 1 year before funding problems caused me to lose my job as a teacher. Oh, wow. Back to school for all of that time and lost my job as a teacher. So I was stuck again in this devastated place of wondering, you know, how I would fulfill my life's purpose of now not having my own children, but affecting other people's and guiding other people's children in this very specific educating way. And a kind of serendipitous thing happened at that same time where a neighbor of mine, whose children I loved on and, you know, babysat in my spare time, they had their third child and lost their nanny. Oh. And they knew that I had just spent all of this time becoming an educator. So they'd asked me, hey, would you like to be our nanny? And you know, and in none of my thinking about how I could affect the lives of children had I ever considered being a nanny. You know, I was working in this very well-paying job in finance, and you know, went to school to be an engineer, and I just never thought of becoming a nanny. And it was such a life-changing experience for me. You know, I really wanted to flex my mommy muscles. And so I took this nanny job, which really just set in motion, you know, this path of where I am today, of, you know, helping moms and helping nannies learn how to feed children in this very specific way that leads to adventurous eating. Because the three kids that I worked with, you know, I found myself suddenly responsible for an infant, a toddler, and a child. And the child was an incredibly picky eater. So she was a five-year-old when I started working with her. And she had maybe, you know, I could count on two hands the number of foods that she was very comfortable with. Mm. And the toddler, you know, thankfully she was still young enough where she was eating a lot of things. You know, the direction from her parents was that she would eat, you know, she would eat almost anything, but she was getting pickier by the day. Mm. And, you know, that's just, if you're nannies who are out there listening right now, who are feeding toddlers, who raised up children, you know, we understand this very particular time of pre-toddlerhood where children get, you know, very skeptical of food. But in this experience of making food for her brother, so the brother, the infant, when he started eating food, I was responsible for making it. And I saw the difference between his sisters, and I really wanted better for him. You know, the only direction that I got from his parents was that I would be making his food, and that was it. Right. Oh, that's pretty much what they said. You need to make his food. And you know, I just realized that I had no idea how to feed any of them. But, you know, coming to this job from this mindset of really wanting to affect children's lives in a positive way, I really took it under my, you know, I took it into my mindset that I was going to do this very well. And you know, thankfully still had access to my college library, where I just went and learned as much as I could about what children need from food, what babies need from food. And in my own experiences with health and fitness, so for myself, I was a kind of a fit, you know, fitness was kind of one of my hobbies. It was, you know, something that I identified with pretty early. So I knew how to feed myself, but I didn't make the connection with how I was feeding myself with how to feed children until I learned about the kinds of things that they need from food. And, you know, I fed the infant in a very specific way. And, you know, every nanny who's out here today, who is listening to this right now, who is responsible for feeding a two-year-old or, you know, an almost two-year-old, not just feeding them, but caring for them, you know that you cannot let them leave your side, because, right, you know, an almost two-year-old will get themselves into trouble.
Yes.
You know, they will find the thing that they shouldn't be doing, and they'll, you know, my biggest fear is always, I don't want her to get hurt. I don't want them to get hurt. So in making this food for her younger brother, you know, the older one, the five-year-old, she would go to school, and I would have the toddler and the baby with me, and the toddler would help me cook. Hmm. And so through this experience of cooking for her younger brother and really trying to help him become more comfortable with a wide variety of food, which was very unlike his sister, who's his older sister, who genuinely struggled at mealtimes. She suffered at mealtimes when there was something on the table that she was not comfortable with. Like, it her visceral reaction to food that she was not comfortable with was so surprising for me to see. Mm. And I really wanted him to have a different experience with that. So learning about the types of food that I could be giving him and experimenting with cooking different types of food for him, but doing that with the toddler had a double effect where, you know, it was surprising to me that everything we made for the infant, he accepted, you know, because we exposed him to a wide variety of foods, including spices, including foods that you just wouldn't think to give to an infant. But because his toddler sister made those things with me, she was exposed to those foods and she was a part of the process. She went from regularly saying no to foods that I would cook and offer to saying yes almost every time to trying something that she helped make.
Yeah, it makes such a big difference.
Huge difference, right? To include her in that process. And I know if for every person listening to this right now who thinks, oh my gosh, Angelina, you cannot be asking me to bring a toddler into the kitchen, because we all know how much harder that is, right?
Right.
You know, it's very hard to do that. But if you're in the position of trying to get a toddler to try things that, you know, if you're just starting to work with a toddler and you aren't implementing this feeding style from the beginning, which is, you know, the biggest part of my coaching now is helping caregivers, moms and caregivers understand that doing this early, this introduction of feeding in this very specific way early is the best, you know, preloading that you can do on the rest of the ease of parenting and of caregiving. Doing these things early is so important, but if you're just starting to work with a toddler who might not be so receptive to eating whatever that might be, whether it be vegetables or if they're stuck in a bit of a rut, getting them into the kitchen with you is a great way to really help them to be more comfortable with the food that you want to serve them.
Yes.
But ultimately, you know, the infant, not surprisingly now, like I know that this is how infants work now, but he developed a very adventurous eating palate. The toddler grew to adopt an adventurous eating palate, and it took nearly a year. But the five-year-old, who's then closer to seven, you know, she's mm-hmm. at that point she was, you know, older, but it took a long time where she finally reached out and started eating things that were not in her repertoire of safe foods. Mm-hmm. So no matter where you are today feeding, just know that you can help the children in your care adopt a different style of eating than they're currently. You know, if you're concerned about the way that they're eating, there is definitely a way to help them. But it might, you know, some of these ways to help might be outside of the realm of what you understand in feeding, because they were for me.
Yes, for sure. And then you have now started your own business.
Correct. Yes. I have, 3 years ago, I started helping at the suggestion of a nanny family that I was working with. You know, I have this great story about, you know, this nanny family that I was working with, very, you know, strong mompreneur that I was working with. You know, she called me and she said, Angelina, we just left the restaurant and I had to call you and tell you what happened. And I was very, you know, I could hear in her voice on the phone, and I was excited to hear what she had to tell me. And she said that she brought her twins, who were then nearly two, mm-hmm. to an Ethiopian restaurant, and she was there with them. And, you know, she noticed that the wait staff, the people who worked there, were kind of giving her funny looks. And she, you know, she kept like kind of looking at the table and seeing, like, she just about when she's ready to ask, like, did we do something wrong? Like, what's happening? The owner came out from his corner booth and walked over to their table. And, you know, she described the scene as, you know, the the staff was kind of peeking out behind him as he's like this imposing man is standing in front of her table. And he said, you know, who are these children who come to my restaurant and eat my food and dip in my sauces? Mm-hmm. And then he paused and he said, families like yours don't hear, usually with children so small.
Wow.
And so he went on to just commend her for the ways that her children were eating and their behavior at the table. And when she finished her conversation with me, she said, you have to help other moms feel this way.
Yeah.
And that was, it was so eye-opening to think that, you know, that this was something that people need, and they do. You know, they really do. And it's been, you know, it's been a wonderful thing to go from having a life's purpose of wanting to have my own children to wanting to guide and affect in a positive way other people's, to helping more families, whether that be with moms or with nannies, to affect this change for children on a greater scale.
Yes. And it's so important. And you are right. Like, you know, there's a lot of skills that I think nannies have that we are like, well, yeah, that's just how you do it. And then, and we don't realize that parents who have only really, you know, interacted with their own children in that deep, meaningful way, that they don't have the same knowledge base that we do, having worked with many different families and getting to see many different styles of feeding or discipline or whatever it is. But today we're talking about feeding. So,
Well, it's funny that you say that because, you know, boundaries at the table are for many parents, you know, it is the beginning of a healthy relationship and boundary setting away from the table.
Yes, that's a really good point.
And it's a huge part of what I teach, is not just what to feed. So I focus on a couple of different things. I focus on, you know, what we need to feed children, right? The nutrition that we all hear that food before one is just for fun, and it's just not true.
Yeah, it is not true. Tell me more about that. About, because so, I've heard that as well, of like, food before one is just for fun.
Right. It's not true. Like, an infant's brain literally doubles in size from their birth to 1 year. Mm. And serving iron-rich foods every day so that they get the oxygen to their rapidly growing brain is so important. Right.
Yeah.
So just the simple nutrients that they need. Like, you will never see again. You will never be able to see from week to week your child growing. Right? Like, literally from 1 week to the next week, you can see a size change in an infant.
Yes.
Right? Like, you can just see this change happening. And yes, we say food before one is just for fun because they really want to stress the importance of breast milk and formula.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The nutrients that an infant gets from those milks are so important. And they really want to stress to not stop serving breast milk or formula. We really need that to happen until at least one. However, infants cannot get everything they need, breast milk or formula, after about 6 months. And for some children who were born prematurely or underweight, they need those nutrients a little bit earlier. So, you know, food before one, it's a very nice rhyme. We all love rhymes. We all remember them, but it is just not true. And not just nutrient wise, but, you know, the palate that your child is developing, there is a time, a very short window of time in an infant's life between about 4 and 7 months called the flavor window, where they are most receptive to new flavors. And the flavors that we give infants during this short period of time. Now, these are just tastes, right? We're not giving a 4-month-old spoonfuls of food. We don't need that. However, they do need to taste some foods, right? If they can taste some bitter veggies during this time, if they can taste some iron-rich foods, these flavors that they learn to accept early during this time, they end up accepting long term. So even through pre-toddlerhood, where they go through this typical skepticism, this period of skepticism around food, if they accept these flavors in this early stage, they are more likely to hold on to that acceptance long term, like for years. Right.
Yeah.
So food before one is so much more than fun.
Yeah.
It is so much fun, but it's more than
it
that.
It is. Yes. And you mentioned iron-rich foods. So I'm curious, yes, just some examples of age-appropriate iron-rich foods.
So I just did a bunch of videos for my program, and one of the most, it's like, it's many people, you either love it or hate it depending on where you come from culturally, I think. Mm-hmm. But liver is one of the best iron rich foods that you can give to a baby.
Wow.
And you make it, and there are many people who advocate for baby led weaning, and I am not against baby led weaning, but I think that there's definitely some benefit to offering some mashed foods early, right? So if you're offering foods before 6 months, which is acceptable if your baby has the signs for food readiness, mm-hmm, but offering them things like a liver pate, right? Mm-hmm. Offering things like pureed meats. I know that sounds gross, but it's not. It's like, for what your baby's getting from that, it is actually highly beneficial. And there are different sources of iron that your body can use readily. And so this is why I bring up meats first, is that even if you're vegetarian, you can still get the iron that you need. However, the plant-based irons that we get, you know, there are things like oats that have iron, broccoli that has iron. There are many sources of iron that live in the plant kingdom. Right. However, the type of iron that exists in plant-based sources is not as readily available to the body. Your body can't absorb them as easily. But if you serve something like broccoli that has a lot of iron in it for a plant, it also has vitamin C, which helps your body absorb iron. So there are ways around serving meats if you're either against meat or you're not comfortable serving meat to an infant. There are ways to help your baby get iron. And I say your baby because, you know, nannies, we all view these as our kids, right? They're moms, don't worry. We don't mean that literally, but we care for your children as if they are our own. So we say our kids, we mean that in the best possible way. But yes, having these iron-rich foods every day for early eaters is just critically important. And there are ways to do it that, you know, that don't require meat, but meats are some, even if you're plan on having a vegetarian child, mm-hmm, helping your infant get what they need by serving some meats early is still a good idea, just because it's so readily available. Their body can use it so quickly and so well. And again, their brains are growing faster now than they ever will again. So help them with that process by helping them have iron-rich foods.
Yes, I love that information. Never would have thought of that. So I'm very glad I've been talking to you.
Wonderful.
And yeah, that is a really good point about, you know, if you are planning on having a vegetarian child, but that, you know, during their first year of life, providing the nutrients that they need and then going from there.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. I also would love to talk about, you know, you talked about discipline and boundaries at the table. I would also love to talk about, you know, just the relationship building with food that starts in infancy at, yes, you know, at the table.
Starts at the breast, or it starts at the nipple, right? I have no judgment about how moms choose to feed, right? If breastfeeding is what you choose, wonderful. If that's not something that you either choose or can do, you know, fed is best, right? We want to feed our infants in ways that are healthy. But this relationship, the feeding relationship that you build with your child again, nannies included, this includes milk feedings, because helping your children. So I like to say that your child's relationship with food, and I'm including milks in this, is their first consensual relationship, right? Because we offer food and they take it or not. Mm-hmm. So the relationship, the way that we empower children through feedings, is by allowing them to become intuitive eaters, which is where the baby-led weaning movement really stems from, or one of the main benefits that they like to talk about with baby-led weaning, is that by allowing children to self-feed, we're allowing them to become intuitive, because they decide when to stop. And you can do this with a spoon, where if your baby, your infant, your newborn turns away from a nipple, even if you're engorged, if you're breastfeeding, you don't continue to feed them, right? Like, we need to allow infants to turn away from a nipple and tell us that they're done. And this continues with food, where, you know, I've seen many, many feedings where, you know, baby looks the other way and we follow their face with the spoon, right? Mm-hmm. If they look away from you, maybe they're done. Maybe they're overwhelmed in the moment. Maybe they're enjoying the food. Maybe they're processing the food. But if you let them come back to you, if you let them turn back to you, if they're still hungry, they will do that. But we have to allow that to happen, because when you get to pre-toddlerhood, like these early, this early friction with feeding, with not listening to a baby's cues, without listening to a toddler's cues, if you do that to a 14-month-old whose main desire is independence, you know, your 14-month-old would rather not eat than not be their own person.
Right, right.
Right? So I have seen tension between feeders and infants happen so early because we're just not paying attention to our infants and our toddlers' cues about feeding, right? There's a wonderful feeding specialist called Ellen Satter, and she has created the division of responsibility in feeding. And this is the basis of the feeding relationship, where caregivers, feeders have jobs at the table, but eaters, no matter how young they are, and this starts again at the nipple, they have a job at the bottle, at the table also. And that is, you know, our job as feeders is to provide the what to eat. Our job is to provide where we're eating that, and our job is to provide when those meals happen. Now, this is past, you know, feeding on demand, which after about 6 months, we're no longer feeding on demand and hopefully feeding more on a schedule, which helps children regulate their hunger. It helps them to regulate their sleep patterns if we're feeding on a schedule. You know, but early newborns, we're definitely letting them tell us exactly when they need to eat.
Right.
But hopefully by about 6 months, they're starting to fall into a schedule. But we provide those things, and your infant has a job too. They tell us what they eat or if they eat at all. Mm-hmm. So they say how much they're going to eat, and they also say if they're going to eat. If your infant decides at a feeding that they're not hungry, we never force that.
Right.
And that's how we empower them. You know, if you think about your child's life, nannies, moms, parents, your children have no power in the world, right?
Right.
None. You decide mostly when they get out of their crib, you decide when they get changed. Hopefully that's on a schedule, right? Hopefully we're right. Paying attention to that too. But they don't decide much in life. But they can decide this, and they should decide this, which is how we empower them in the feeding relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. And I have seen toddlers who are not feeling like they are being seen and heard in other ways, take it out at the table.
Because absolutely,
you know, when power struggles happen, they happen with what goes into their bodies, what comes out of their bodies, and what goes on their bodies. So like clothing, potty, and meal times are really where those power struggles ramp up. And meal time, I mean, all of those we have to do every day. So like, why not, you know, work on this empowerment and consent and all of that from infancy so that hopefully, you know, you're still going to have power struggles. They're impossible to avoid, but hopefully you have the foundations laid that you can navigate them in a way that is healthy for you and healthy for the child.
Hello, nannies. This is Rory from Nanniest. Nanniest is the free web app for nannies. It's an honor for us to support this podcast and to support nannies around the world as they deliver essential care. See how Nanniest can support you in your career by visiting nanniest.com. That's nanniest.com. Thanks, and back to you, Martha.
Yeah, the five words, I think the five most powerful words you have in your arsenal as your child gets older are, you don't have to eat. Mm-hmm. Because that thing of, well, fine, I'm going to choose not to eat. Like that should, food should never be a power struggle.
Right.
Right. I always tell parents and nannies, you know, you will never have a better opportunity to parent a child. A nanny's parent also, mm-hmm. but you will never have a better opportunity to parent your child than every time that you feed them. Mm-hmm. Because we have to feed our kids and we have the opportunity to provide them with offering the food that, you know, at the end of the day, no matter how little you think you know about food, you know more about food than your child does.
Right.
You know more about it than the children in your care. You choose the food. They choose to eat, right?
Yeah.
So in this feeding relationship, we're empowering them to make that decision, but we're also setting boundaries by saying, this is what we're having. You don't have to eat it, but I'm not making anything else. Because
right.
how many short order cooks do we know who want to pull their hair out at the end of the day?
Yep. Yep.
Right.
It's a lot. And so I am curious about, for adventurous eating, for encouraging specifically kids to try new foods and things like that, what is your advice on offering new foods and encouraging that adventurous style?
Yeah. So again, this preloading, you know, the work that we do early, whether it is boundary setting or, you know, adapting an adventurous style, this, so much of it happens early. If you can start early, please start early, because the longer you wait, the harder it gets. And you know, the human palate is malleable. That's why someone who has just been unhealthy for most of their lives can decide at 30 to make a change, and they actually can do that, right? Like this thing can happen. But if you, like, I always ask parents and caregivers to think about the big vision that they have for their children, the children in their care. And that is, you know, maybe not today when you're getting lost in the minutia of how hard, you know, infancy is, or how hard it is to transition to work, or how hard it is to work with a toddler and then. But like, where do you want them in a year? Where do you want them in 3 years, at 5 years old? And forward think to when they're 20 and coming back home and having a meal with you. How do you see them eating, right? Like, what kinds of things do you want for them at those points? Start now. Because if you start with infancy, you start with their first bites, and you don't get stuck in the rut of offering just bananas, just apples, just sweet potatoes. If you expand that palate early and get into the healthy habit of cooking a wide variety of things. Now, I very specifically focus on how to do this in very simple ways. So I know feeding and cooking is like one of the biggest struggles in a household, but adopting these healthy, simple strategies early will help set you up for success for your family's health. And whether you're a parent or whether you're a caregiver, you know, really being able to offer this healthy, adventurous, palate building strategy of continuing to offer you. You can offer a three-year-old, like I offered this five-year-old who was extremely picky. Now, she did not have, there are some, you know, sensory processing issues that may cause a child to be very selective about food. This child did not have those sensory issues. She just did not have great feeding experiences early. Mm-hmm. So she, and people around her were very controlling with getting her to eat things. Mm-hmm. So she felt safe eating these 10 things, and she did not feel safe trying anything new because it was kind of forced on her to try to do that. Right. Where the grownups around her were trying to step over their jobs of feeding and into her job of eating. But even with her, you know, given the freedom to eventually learn to trust me, that I wasn't going to force her to take one bite. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to force her to try anything that she didn't want. You know, that I was going to offer things at mealtimes every day, and there'd always be something on there that I knew she would eat.
Right.
But I wasn't going to make anything else. This is what we were having for meals. But I also was never going to force her. You know, it took her nearly a year to trust me to not force her to eat things before she decided to branch out of her comfort zone. So it is possible, no matter where you are today, it is possible. The keys are to continue offering foods that are outside of that comfort zone, right? So if you do it early, that is the best way that you can set yourself up for this. And one of the best ways that I get parents, caregivers to really consider how they feed is to say that, you know, the children that you feed will ultimately eat the way that you do. Mm-hmm. And sit with that for a second. Because if that makes you uncomfortable, you know where to start.
Right. Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And I also think, and this gets a little off topic, but I also think in this idea that we have of like being so busy all the time,
right. Yep.
That's like seen, that's lauded as like this great thing of being so busy. Like I hear lots of people be like, oh my gosh, I was so busy, I forgot to eat. And just right. Thinking about that with children in mind of like these little eyes are watching you.
Yes.
And if that is your current relationship with food, that will be passed down whether you're the nanny or the parent.
Yes. So one of the exercises that I take my clients through is, you know, kind of walking backwards through time to try to pinpoint where your own, where our own ideas about how we feed ourselves come from. Mm. And it often means going to our family mealtimes and our family tables and thinking about specific instances where we heard the grownups around us talk about how they shouldn't eat this, can't eat this, how we shouldn't eat this, eat too much of this. Mm-hmm. You know, the things that we heard in childhood ended up being the way that we feed ourselves. And, you know, it's a really healthy, at times it can be very uncomfortable exercise because it comes back to why we feed ourselves the way that we do, which is right. Not always right. We're not always loving ourselves with food.
Right.
If we're feeding ourselves emotionally, if we're emotional eaters, we will be emotional feeders, which, you know, if you've ever struggled with how you feel about yourself as an eater, mm-hmm. You know, you want better for the children in your life, no matter if they're your kids or they're your nanny kids. We really want better for them than the hangups that we have about food in our bodies. right? And we can do that, but it often takes, it always takes addressing those things for ourselves, which, you know, my own personal desire for health and fitness, you know, I'm not only a parent coach, but I'm also a health coach. I use my health coaching experience to guide what I do with food for families, but it's not, you know, parent coaching is my focus rather than helping parents get fit is obviously not fit, but healthy is an important thing to do, because again, the way that we eat is the way that we feed. It's the way that the children in our care will end up eating. But if we're not feeding ourselves adventurously, we're probably not going to be adventurous feeders. And that is the only way that children become adventurous eaters, because, you know, there's a saying of your children won't eat what you don't feed them. And that's a double-edged thing where, yeah, they won't eat. Maybe they won't eat as many cookies. Eventually they will, because they're going to be around their peers.
Right.
But if you don't serve those things regularly in infancy, toddlerhood, and childhood, they're not going to have the emotional connection to home with, you know, oh, you feel poorly today, or you're sad, so I'm going to give you a cookie to help you feel better. We want to try to avoid that as much as possible. You can share an experience with a child over a banana. When they're young, the time with you, the things that you say in those moments to them are the things that emotionally heal them. We don't want those things to be food, right?
Right, right.
And if we're feeding ourselves that way, it becomes very challenging to not feed our children that way. And we ultimately want better for them. We want them to be healthier people than the struggles that we have.
Yeah, a quick switch that I have encouraged parents to make is, if parents are, you know, somebody falls down and is upset and they have a habit of being like, why don't we get a treat to help you feel better? Things like that. I actually tell parents, you know what actually scientifically is much better in those moments is getting a glass of ice water, because that actually calms your brain down. Like, that's a great thing to do. And so I'm like, if we have that connection of I'm feeling upset and I want to ingest something to help me feel better, a glass of ice water is actually going to help you get there. Whereas, you know, chocolate is not, as much as we wish that the Harry Potter chocolate frogs did work. a glass of ice water is better, you know?
Yeah, that's fantastic advice. That is fantastic advice, because the, you know, the carnival that added sugar adds to your brain, especially, you know, the younger that you are, the emotional response that you're going to have with that and the emotional memory that you will make with that is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to forward think for those children that when life gets hard later on, what are they going to be doing to soothe themselves from life being hard, right? Our job is never to make life not hard. And this is a thing I find with, this is a struggle and a challenge for many parents is, you know, life will be hard. You cannot stop life from being hard for your kids. You have to allow them resilient in hard things, and we medicate, which is, you know, essentially what you're doing with a cookie. If you're trying to help someone feel better with something sweet, that is literally medicating them, because you're creating an endorphin rush in their brain. You know, that's what added sugar can do for us,
right?
And we want to try to avoid that as much as possible, because those will be the ways that our children medicate themselves from life when they're older.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's such a good point. I did have a question for you about when we were talking about consent and food. I have heard, and I would love to know your expert opinion about this, is I've heard that it's really not good to try to sneak in veggies.
Right. So as much as possible, and again, the earlier we start this process, the better. Because if if you're letting a 14-month-old put spinach in a smoothie, they know it's in there,
right?
And if you allow them to do that every day, and they're 3 and 4 and 5, they just know that spinach goes in smoothies.
Right.
If they see you do it and they don't know that you've been doing it, now you are essentially tricking them, right? And trust is such an important, it is such an important part of raising children, whether you are a parent or a caregiver. Trust between you and the little people in your life is, you know, you, that trusting relationship, it is the basis for their attachment. How safe they feel in the world is how much they can trust you in the world, right? Like, we are their rudders for so much of their early life. We're like completely guiding them along this path, and they need to be able to trust us. And you shouldn't have to sneak veggies into food. Your toddler, your pre-toddler, again, around 12 and 14 months, they will go through some food skepticism. There's a there's a theory called the omnivore's dilemma, which makes, it makes a lot of sense to me. And, you know, the theory is, back when we were tribal and hunting and gathering, you know, a 14-month-old would probably have a sibling. And, you know, maybe have to, and they'd probably be beginning to forage for themselves. And green plants are the most toxic plants to humans in all of biology. You know, green plants are the things that can kill us. So during their first, you know, during the time when mom was carrying them around and feeding their infant from the foods that were safe, baby is learning about the types of foods that are safe. However, it makes sense evolutionarily that at the point that they start to forage for themselves, they're a little bit skeptical about the food that they're consuming because it might kill you, right? Like, when you're foraging in the plant world, the things that you decide to eat, yes, omnivores, we can eat everything. However, there's a catch. The things that we eat can kill us.
Right.
Right? So, like, I have never worked with a toddler. I've never raised an infant from this very specific way that I feed, who has not gone through the skepticism, but who has also not gotten through it. Mm-hmm. Right? So they go through a period of like, mom, I'm not going to eat that. Well, you loved broccoli yesterday. Right. Well, I'm not going to eat that. Okay. You don't have to eat it.
Yeah.
And chances are, when I look away and I say, okay, you don't have to eat that. When I look away, guess what they do? I'm going to eat that.
Right.
Right? Like, it just, they want to make sure that I don't have an agenda. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that evolutionary thing is, like why toddlers are so concerned that you might be trying to poison them.
Yeah.
Right? Because they are. Obviously. Yeah. It's like, you want me to eat this? I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. You don't have to. I don't care if you eat it. You don't have to eat that. And they get through it. But we have to keep offering, right? We have to keep doing that thing. But the more honesty that you can have with your child ever is the best thing. Because if they think that you're sneaky, you know, maybe they won't trust you so much. And the most important thing that you can do with your child is to always be the place that they can come to and tell you things. You know, and that, this is, again, this relationship over mealtimes. This is where a lot of these conversations happen in time, is over mealtimes. If your children trust you,
right,
if you've empowered them at the table, then they can look at you and say, this person doesn't force me to do things. This person listens. This person respects my boundaries. And that may seem like a lot of power to give to a child, but they deserve it and they need that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've also heard that it takes about 11 exposures within one month.
11, 15, 30, yeah. Like, and exposures don't mean just what you think they do. Probably the exposure isn't just seeing it. It means tasting it.
Oh,
right. So that's an exposure. They've actually, correct. So that means how many times you have to offer it before they actually put it in their mouth.
Yeah, a bunch.
Could be lots more than that, right? Just keep offering.
Yeah.
Keep offering.
Because I have seen parents and nannies and all caregivers like give up on foods after like 3 or 4 times. And I'm like, there's no
after
way.
After the first face.
Yeah.
Right? After the first time that you give broccoli or some bitter veggie and your baby makes that one face, and then you're like, I'm never giving, they hate that, and they're never giving that again. No, keep giving it to them.
Yeah.
Keep offering it.
Yeah.
Because we learn to like things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? Can you think of a time from your childhood, something that you tried that, like, I remember really disliking bell peppers.
Mm-hmm.
And I love bell peppers now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when that switch happened, but you know, I was fed in a way that my mom made dinner, and I was thankful that, you know, at this point in my life, I'm thankful that she made dinner every night. She was a career mom, but she made dinner every night.
Wow. Yeah.
But it was never what I wanted, right? It wasn't like,
right.
It wasn't like I had a say in what happened at dinner. This is just what dinner was. And I eventually learned to eat things like beef livers and, you know, onions and bell peppers and all kinds of things because that was what was for dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. That journey was onions for me. I really didn't like them as a child, and I love them now. Like,
well, and that's a thing to remember too, like strong tasting foods. Infants, toddlers, and children have so many more taste buds than we do.
Mm-hmm.
So that there are probably a lot of foods that taste incredibly different to young people than they do for us.
Right.
But that doesn't mean we stop offering. When we stop offering a food to a child, and especially when we offer something else that might be more palatable, we're essentially telling them that we don't believe that they can learn to like new foods.
Yeah.
When we say, I'll just get the cereal, or if you keep that on the table, or if you make a peanut butter sandwich instead, or you're telling your children, again, parents, caregivers, you're telling them that they don't have the skills to learn to like new things.
Right.
And they do. They just do. Like this, they absolutely can learn to love a wide variety of foods. And this includes spices.
Mm-hmm.
If we have to give our babies spices, like the baby food does not need to be bland. I know plenty of babies who even enjoy heat, and this is generally offered in different cultures. So, you know, people with a different cultural background where heat is a larger part of the cultural food end up giving infants, you know, spicier spices, you know, heat earlier, but there's no biological difference between infants who accept spices and those who don't. It's just how we end up feeding them.
Right. That makes complete sense. Oh, I love all of that. That is all. It's so helpful. And I really appreciate you kind of laying that all out, because I do think that it can feel overwhelming. It's like, oh, I have to do this 5 times, you know, 5+.
Right.
For the next 18 years, like this is, it can feel really overwhelming. And
what you spoke to earlier of saying, you know, just how we're kind of lauded for, oh, I was so busy, I couldn't feed myself. You know, I think a lot of people have lost the habit of health.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to me, health is a habit. And, you know, I am not, I've mentioned sugar before. I am not the sugar police. I think that children should have sugar, you know, that older children should absolutely not have forbidden foods. There shouldn't be foods that were like, no, you can't have those.
Right.
We should restrict foods for children under 2. We should absolutely restrict things like saturated fat, added sugar. But just this health as a habit. You know, I have seen some programs for very young people that include very complicated meal plans.
Mm.
And you just don't need that. You don't, like, even to feed yourself, you don't need complicated meal plans. feeding yourself in healthy ways and creating this health is a habit can be so simple where, you know, I hear from parents and caregivers all the time, like, oh my goodness, cooking every day is the worst. I can't bring myself to do it. And so we eat very, you know, we eat convenience foods more frequently because I can't cook every day. Well, for an infant, can you cook once in a month? Mm-hmm. For your family, I was a nanny who cooked for my families because I took that responsibility on. Like, right. I just, like, that was just something that I did. This is how I got here, right? Like, it's right. I became the cooking nanny. But doing that, and also, so I have kind of a side story. You know, my health coaching, for a little while, I was competitively bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was prepping food during times when I had to build muscle. You know, I would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go to the gym and try to build muscle. And so I would have to feed myself in a very specific way. So feeding myself and feeding my nanny family, you know, I had to come up with some very specific strategies to make this type of feeding. Because being an, you know, I'm also an incredibly active nanny where right. kids are outside, we're doing stuff. So I'm not in the kitchen all of the time. So making this healthy habit as simplified as possible, you know, I think that is very important for today's parents and caregivers because busy is a thing. You know, we're all busy. We're all so busy with mm-hmm. life and with everything.
Yes. Yes. And I have, you know, like Sunday now is like my meal prep day and it's really yes. changed my whole life.
Yes. Right.
To just,
but prep. I bet it's probably more simple than you.
Oh, so much more simple yeah. and enjoyable. Like I, yes. this past weekend, I listened to an entire audiobook over the course of the weekend, which I haven't like downed an audiobook like that in a while. And most of yeah. it I did like while I was meal prepping and it was just so enjoyable. It was like such a good way to fill my cup for the week.
And that's something that we do, you know, whether you're, you know, whether you're cooking for yourself, you know, or cooking for your nanny family or cooking for yourself, if you're cooking with children, like again, starting early, how wonderful a tradition is it for you to be able to give to the child in your life this, yeah. And then, you know, I remember we spent time in the kitchen and we talked over making food and I helped. And there's a lot of push to keep kids out of the kitchen because it's just, you know, some parents and caregivers just need the time in the kitchen alone to kind of veg out. Mm-hmm. And if you need that time, awesome. But mm-hmm. letting your family know that this is important is one of the greatest gifts that you can give the children in your life because they will grow up and end up feeding themselves the way that you fed them and feeding their families the way that you fed them. So having a day like Sunday where families cook together, you know, as a nanny, I wasn't able to do that on Sundays. Obviously, right. I wasn't there on Sundays, but having that be as children got older, having that be something that they were a part of was, you know, again, it's a gift. Helping them understand that what happens in the kitchen is nourishing, it's important, it's a time for bonding, it's a time where we learn about food, it's a time where we learn about our bodies. You know, maybe people listening right now just don't have the skills in the kitchen or don't have the knowledge about food or nutrition. And if those are the only pieces that you're missing, please reach out because that's something that I focus on a lot is how do we do these things? You know, again, what do we feed? How do we make it? How do we feed it? And why we feed this way are my pillars of helping people do this well.
Yeah. So how should they reach out to you? How can they find out more and get in touch with you?
Well, you can always reach out to me either at my email address at angelina@adventurouseating, or you can go to adventurouseating.com. And if you go to adventurouseating.com right now, there is a wonderful little piece of content that I've put together that is called the 3 best playtime activities to help your baby get ready for solid foods. So it, you know, how are playtime and feeding related, right? So if you go there now, you can just give me your email address and I will be in contact with you that way. You will get that piece of content for free. But yeah, through either through my email address or just at adventurouseating.com. You can also find me on Facebook, obviously, on Instagram, Adventurous Eating. I do run a group, a private Facebook group for moms and caregivers called Adventurous Eating. And in that group, every week I do a live class and we focus on some different part of feeding, whether it is, again, what to feed, how to make it, how to feed it, and why we feed this way. I focus a lot on the feeding relationship. So every week you'll learn a little bit more about how to feed your baby, and I'm very responsive in all of those different avenues. So if you have questions, please reach out. I love helping guide parents and caregivers to connect with their big vision that they have for feeding their families so that they can do this well, because it is not as hard as we all think that it is. It is, if I could do that while working 12-hour days in a family and still living my life outside of that, you know, there are so many nannies who do this well. There are so many families that do this well. And it's often just understanding a few simple things that can help get your entire family's health on the track that you want it, so that when you forward think to where you want your children to be, you know, there's an important point I'd like to make about, you know, the way that we feed. And it's something that's usually very surprising. I tell the story, I ask people to think about these two hypothetical children. And the first one is named Sammy and the second one is named Lila. And Sammy eats really healthy, super clean food every day. And Lila eats mostly convenience foods every day. And when I ask parents and caregivers, you know, who do you think has the greater probability of positive long-term outcomes? And, you know, without a doubt, you know, without fail, people say Sammy, right? Like, he's eating the things that we think children should be eating. But if we step back and look a little bit, you know, at the bigger picture of how these two children are eating, you know, Sammy does eat predominantly clean, healthy food because that's what he's offered every day. But when he sits down for mealtimes, he's criticized almost at every meal for not eating enough of X or eating too much of Y. And, you know, every meal for him is kind of a disaster because he's being told he's got to take at least 3 bites. And if he ever sees dessert, he has to finish all of that food that he doesn't like, right? Like, he's got to eat all of the green thing on his plate that he just doesn't like. And if he wants dessert, he's got to eat that. And, you know, long-term, that is a really hard thing for a kid to grow up with, because his sense of self at the table, you know, he's not validated at that meal, at any meal, right? Like, he's criticized for it. And then, you know, on the other hand, we have Lila, who, yeah, she eats a lot of processed food, but, you know, she even does that in the backseat of her car when her and her mom go through the drive-thru. But the thing that's different is that, you know, Lila's mom gets out of the driver's seat and sits in the back seat with her, and they share a meal together And Lila's not criticized for what she eats. In fact, her and her mom talk about their day. You know, her mom talks about what her day was like. Lila talks about what school was like. And, you know, they talk about the smell of the food and the way that it tastes, and they enjoy each other's time together. And statistically, studies have shown that the kid who has the greater probability of positive long-term outcomes is Lila. Even though she ate not the best food for most of her childhood. Right. But she was validated at meals where she, you know, she felt like she understood who she was in terms of her relationship with her mother. And, you know, they talked about family stories instead of what she was eating or what she wasn't eating. And, you know, long-term, that is the thing that really matters. So this feeding relationship that we have, yes, it's important that we feed, especially our youngest children, good, healthy foods, and doing it early, again, preloading this adventurous eating style, this adventurous eating feeding style, you know, you make your life so much easier the earlier that you start. And you can have a kid who at 3 years old is voraciously eating things like broccoli and salmon and sushi. Like, you can have a kid who does that.
Right.
It's the work that we do early with them that really matters there. But the way that we feed is so critically important to help our children grow up well and to be, you know, there's a greater correlation between healthy meal times, meaning this relationship that we have with our kids at the table, there's a greater correlation for positive outcomes than there is even having the resources to eat healthy food. So it's a dramatically important thing that we do for children. And again, one of the most important ways that we can parent our kids is every time that we feed them.
Yes. Yes. And I really do encourage you to reach out to Angelina. She is just delightful and like a good listener. And you come away from talking with her feeling better about yourself. So reach out.
I appreciate that so much.
Well, it's also very true. Well, wonderful. All of the contact information for Angelina is also down in the show notes. So if you were driving or doing dishes or cooking.
Cooking, yes.
you don't have to worry. It's down there for you. So you can just click on it. You don't need to write it down. Wonderful. Well, we end each episode with a cute, fun story. And Angelina has brought one that is on topic.
Yes, wonderful. Well, I think we talked about one beforehand, but I think I'm going to tell a different one.
Wonderful.
Well, I have a couple. Well, I guess I'll tell the original story that I was going to tell. This family of twins were, you know, and fed in this very specific way. I brought them to a birthday party, you know, a nanny birthday party for one of our little nanny friends. And the little girl who was, again, about 2 years old, saw that the other kids were just, you know, really going to town on some goldfish crackers. Mm-hmm. And you know, she had been raised with this way of eating where she'd eaten a lot of really clean food. She's eaten, you know, she hadn't seen added sugar up until that point. She had never seen at that point. So she, you know, she asked me, she was like, can I have some of these? And I was like, yeah, of course. And so she grabbed some and she threw them in her mouth and started to chew, and her eyes got really big and she stopped chewing and she looked at me and she opened her mouth and started, you know, scraping her tongue. And she started scraping the goldfish off of her tongue, and she just looked at me and she said, I don't like it. I don't like it. Which, you know, like, this is one of the benefits of feeding kids in this way, is that, you know, we think that we're going to have to say no a lot when they're begging us for the kinds of foods that maybe you don't want them to eat so much of. But if you can do this early, starting with your baby's first bites, you're not going to have to do that, because chances are they're not going to develop a palate for those types of foods if they don't experience them before too. So the longer we can keep them away from processed foods, the easier it will be long term for you to keep them away from them. And it's just a wonderful thing to not have to stress so much when your kid's literally trying to scrape goldfish crackers off their tongue.
Yes, that's such a funny image too, of just like, oh
Yes.
no, thank you.
I don't like
I
it.
don't like it.
It
That's
was so
so,
funny.
that's very funny. Do you want to also tell the other story? I don't mind having it
Sure.
at
So her
the
brother, he went from being the baby who really loved broccoli to going through this, pre-toddler stage of food skepticism, where he went from like he loved broccoli as a baby. He goes through this period of skepticism, and then he, for about 6 months, just decides he's not going to eat broccoli. And I keep offering it because his sister still likes it. And at that time, I'm in training for a competition, and so I'm eating lots of broccoli, like lots of chicken and lots of broccoli. And I swear I'm traumatized by the chicken and broccoli thing, because I ate it like so many meals during that time. But there was just, after about 6 months of him not like never eating any of his own broccoli, he, I'm getting ready to eat my own, and I see this finger, like I see this little finger point in front of me, and I hear try. And I'm like, I look down and I ask him if he wants some of my chicken, and he, points to the broccoli, and he says even more emphatically, he's like, try. And I'm like, do you want some of my broccoli? And again, try. So like I hold my plate up for him and I let him pick. And not only does he picks the biggest piece on my plate, and then I think like he's just being, toddler. He's like, I'm just gonna take it and throw it or whatever. But not only did he take it, but he ate it and ate it like I hadn't fed him ever. And from that point, went on to continue to eat broccoli like it was his jam. So
This show has
continue
been
to
brought to
offer
you
the
by
food,
Machine
because you
Culture.
never know when they're going to surprise you and just one day decide, yeah, I like that again. It, 6 months of never touching his broccoli, and all of a sudden he was like, yeah, give me some of that. And he took mine and ate it, and I never got to have my own broccoli anymore.
Well, yeah, that is a potential downside, but
Yeah,
now,
right.
yeah, he that's so wonderful. I love that. I love that so much. Well, thank you so much, Angelina. This was lovely.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this podcast. I love it. I'm a huge fan. I recommend it to everyone that I know, not just nannies, but also all the mamas in my network.
Oh.
You always have such wonderful information and some great strategies for helping us get through the days well and in one piece.
Oh, well, thank you. I really
You're welcome.
appreciate that. And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
I love providing Chronicles of Nania to you at no cost. So if you love this podcast, please consider donating by clicking the Support the Show link in the show notes. I also totally understand if a donation isn't the way you can show your support right now. Another excellent way to support the podcast is to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Those ratings help other nannies and caregivers around the world find Chronicles of Nania. Also, if you love the show, tell your friends. Word of mouth is so helpful to get the word out about the podcast. And truly, thank you for listening. It really means the world to me. The Chronicles of Nania is produced and hosted by Martha Tyler. Artwork by Noni Blastodon. Theme music by Brad Kemp. Find him at secondbedroomstudios.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chronicles of Nania and on Twitter at Nania Podcast. To contact us, email chroniclesofnania@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.